In this week's episode, Katie Singer and Jenny Stone discuss practice mergers. They cover the financial implications, what practices need to do before deciding to merge, and other considerations such as preparing accounts and merging NHS contracts.
Accountancy on Prescription by RBP, one of the leading firms of medical specialist accountants. We know what you find tough, but don't you worry, as we know our stuff.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Accountancy on Prescription. I'm Katie Singer, one of the partners here at RBP, and today I'm joined by my partner, Jenny Stone.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. How are you, Jen?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you.
Good. And today we're going to be discussing the financial implications and surroundings about mergers. So it's something that we are constantly talking about to clients, to potential clients, the implications of practices merging. And we just thought it'd be good to do an update on what's going on in the general practice world at the moment around mergers.
Agreed, Katie. And I think I always say before COVID, everybody was talking about mergers. And then we had COVID. And of course, nobody was thinking about it. But I feel like I've got quite a number of mergers that I'm dealing with that are sort of ongoing. So I feel like it's become, you know, the next buzz thing to be talking about.
So I guess the first thing we probably need to discuss is, why would a practice merge, or why are we getting so many conversations about mergers at the moment?
So Katie, we're seeing quite a number of scenarios. One of the obvious ones is obviously when we've got a single-handed GP practice and they're looking to retire. And at the moment, practices are struggling to recruit partners. So what I normally do when I'm talking to single-handers is I say, well, you've got a choice. You either need to merge so that you can then, you know, give somebody else the contract to run. Or if you close your practice, if it's a small list, it's going to get dispersed. You're going to have redundancy costs and so on. So the obvious one is to merge. So I've dealt with a number of mergers recently where I've had GPs retiring and they're looking at a way out. Struggling practices, you know, some practices that are really struggling, they're looking to merge with other practices to share resources. Again, you know, practices I'm seeing at the moment concerned about last man standing. You know, they might be in a big practice, they might have been four or five partners and they're down to one. And that's another scenario where they actually want to merge. I'm dealing with one at the moment, Katie, where actually they want to be their own PCN. So again, there's an advantage if they can merge with, you know, either practicing their PCN or similar practice, and then they could have a big enough list where they can be one PCN. So I dealt with a merger a couple of years ago where that was one of the main reasons. You know, they wanted this particular practice, they wanted the merger to go ahead because then they were going to be big enough to just be one PCN and therefore then have control of the PCN budget. So that's another reason why we're also seeing mergers.
Quite forward thinking, potentially, that practice, because obviously when we first heard about PCNs, we didn't necessarily know how big they would grow and how important and integral they'd be at the moment to general practice. Yeah, I think there seems to be a real feeling of dread around small practices. And by small, I mean, I don't even think it's that small, but practices with a list of sort of 6,000 or 7,000 patients or less, especially those who are on their own. I mean, I don't even know if it's a fact anymore, but I'm sure now you can't have a contract. You couldn't create a new contract in a sole trader. I believe that the ICB would require you to have a minimum of two partners.
Yeah, I think it's been known for a very long time, hasn't it, that they don't want to be dealing with these small single-handed practices, even though, you know, some of our single-handed practices can be really efficient, achieving all their targets and absolutely brilliant. But there is this kind of need, isn't there, that the ICB wants to have deal with bigger organisations, whether it just makes it easier for them and their administration. Hence why I think we've got PCNs, you know, because practices weren't merging. And so I think partly that's probably why we've got the creation of PCNs, to get these sort of practices to work together. I've got some practices that were a PCN, that were three individual practices. And actually, because they are a PCN in themselves as well, they've gone, do you know what? It might just be easier if we merge. So that's something that they're looking at. So they were already working together as a PCN and now going, actually, why don't we just merge and be one practice?
It was an organic and natural flow, I guess.
Yes. Only so, for those that they get on. Obviously, not all of our PCNs and practices get on, but there we go.
Something we will probably cover later. So if you were thinking of merging, what would you say is the first thing that needs to be considered? So what's the first step?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Katie, we're talking about this from a finance point of view. So, you know, yes, there's loads of other things to think about when you're merging. You know, do you get on? Are your sessions similar and so on? But obviously, we're looking at it from a very much financial point of view. And I always say to practices, you need to be exchanging accounts. You need to have a review of accounts. You know, so I suppose, Katie, where I get involved is I will get the accounts for all the practices that are merging. I'll review them. I'll look at kind of their income. I'll look at their expenses. And I've said this, and I say this a lot to clients that talk to me about merging. One of the make or break things is actually profits. Mm. I think it is very difficult. You know, we know, Katie, we see practices. They can be the same size practice in exactly the same area, have all the same enhanced services, but bottom line profit can be completely different.
Jenny, so, I can think of practices in, you know, when you have health centres. You know, when you turn up to a health centre and there's four or five different practices, I can think of practices in the same health centre whose profits are wildly different.
Yes.
And it doesn't, I guess, on paper make sense because they're in the same location with the same demographic of patients, with everything that could potentially be the same. But the way you manage, the way you choose to staff, the way you choose to operate, the hours you choose to work, it's going to vary. And that's why one of the key things everyone will take is, yes, there's obviously financial things to consider, but it is actually the people you're going to be working with. But that's the same as any business.
Yes. And I think what's really difficult, and I dealt with a merger, this was pre-COVID, they were three practices looking to merge, and you had a really high earning practice, a middle range practice, so probably sort of sitting, you know, slightly above our average in terms of profits, and then a lower earning. And of course, if you're looking to merge, you've got to decide, well, how are we going to share profits? And normally you will share profits based on the sessions that you work. So what it would have meant if these three practices merged, the high earning partners were going to take a drop in profits, and the partners from the lower earning practice were just suddenly going to automatically have an increase just thanks for merging. And actually, I spent 3 years with them trying to set up parity models, looking at different things. And then actually they just couldn't merge because that was the deciding factor. So I think if you're looking to merge, I think looking at finances really early on is important, because you can have discussions about staff and how you're going to, you know, make sure your sessions are the same, and you go through loads of stuff, and then you get the accounts, and then you might have spent so much time looking to merge and then gone, oh, there's no way we can merge. Our profits are so different. So I think it's really important to look at finance early on, exchange accounts. Katie, you know, what we also do for our clients that are merging is we'll prepare like a profit projection for the merger, because there may well be staff savings that are going to be made. I've got a merger currently that's just in talks, and what they're saying is actually we won't need both our premises. So they're looking to basically merge and then run from one premises. So that's going to bring savings. So I think it's a case of reviewing historical information and then also looking forward to, well, if we merge, what are going to be some of the changes? You know, are we going to be able to, you know, save on costs and therefore as a combined merged entity, increase profits?
Yeah. And I think sometimes just some practical conversations about it, like I've had a merger in the past where location-wise, they weren't very close by each other and it didn't really work. I mean, we will talk about the implications of merging and demerging later on, but on paper, it sounded wonderful, but it just didn't quite work out. So I think there are so many factors to consider, and it isn't something that you can enter into lightly. And yes, Jenny's right. We do projection packs for clients if you want them. And, you know, we will ask lots and lots of questions and do so many different scenarios, because actually the reality behind it is you don't actually know what's going to happen when you do merge. There could be significant what we call economies of scale, which is where you make cost savings because you're a group effectively. And sometimes you can't quantify that because you just don't know how much of an impact it's going to have. But yes, we have seen some very successful mergers, haven't we, Jenny?
Yes, yeah.
Some real flourishing practices.
Yeah, we've dealt with a lot of mergers, and certainly it all kind of went quiet during COVID and it's all picked up again. I feel like, well, I've got quite a number of mergers going on at the moment that I'm dealing with. So yes.
So one of the things you just mentioned was talking about practices with varying different profits. And so that's something definitely to consider. So when we're looking at mergers, or when practices that are merging are looking at their models, what kind of things could they potentially do? Are there different scenarios, maybe for years one and two, and then years three and four? What could potentially be put in place?
Yeah, I think what I always sort of talk about is, if profit levels are so different that it is a make or break of a decision emerging, is could they look at parity models? So hopefully sort of GP partners are familiar with this term, because quite often when new partners join, they might do, say, 6 sessions, but in the first year, they might only get 80% of those 6 sessions. So they're 80% parity. So what you could do is, if profit levels are so different, you could kind of go, okay, let's agree a parity model. Let's kind of go, year one, these partners, you know, their profit is 70%, let's say, of the higher earning practice. So maybe year one, they'll be on 70% parity. Year two, they might be on 80%. So you could look at parity models. What I would say is, that should be a short-term thing. So that could be 1 to 4, 5 years, but even that sounds quite a long time. You know, you might want to say, actually, we should just do 3 years to parity. Because, Katie, you know, the things that GPs fall out about is workload and money. So you've got to think that if you've merged and you've got partners from one practice and then partners from another practice, if they're all working 6 sessions and they're all doing the same work, seeing the same patients, taking on all the responsibility exactly the same, why should one of those partners get 70% parity when another's getting 100%? And they both might have been, say, GP partners for 10, 15 years. So it has to be a short term, i.e. we're recognising there is a difference, but as we work together and we make savings, we will hopefully all benefit, and then sort of, you know, you get to full parity. I think, as I said, the merger I dealt with for about 3 years, and I did so many different parity model options. I think the higher earning practice, it was too much of a risk for them, and they were particularly much higher earning. So I think, yes, you could look at parity models, you could discuss it, but you have got to be thinking, this is a short term. We've all got to be sharing the same profits, because, you know, for the benefit of that merged practice, you all need to be on the same page. You know, you can't have everybody falling out and saying, well, it's unfair. You know, I'm still doing all the same work, but earning significantly less than this one just because my practice, you know. So I think it is got to be a short-term option.
Yeah. And a lot of people listening who are thinking about potentially their own mergers, you know, they might be more senior in their years. Yes, their profits are very high. Say we've got a two-partner practice with very high earning profits, and they're thinking about merging with a nearby practice where there's 5 partners who are fairly average or even lower than average. You know, those 2 highly earning partners, well, they're going to potentially have to take the hit so that they can give their list or give their practice to a neighbouring practice to keep the list alive. And we've got lots of practices who are, you know, bigger than small, so 7,000 patients plus, who have partners who are definitely approaching retirement age or are over retirement age and really don't have much in by way of succession planning, because, as you all know, there isn't the same drive for partners as there has been in the past. And so this is why merging is such a good solution, especially if you are thinking about retirement. It really is.
And I think it's looking at the bigger picture. We dealt with a very large merger some years ago, and actually some of the partners knew that they were going to take a drop in profits, but they accepted that because they could see longer term, the bigger picture, and that actually they would be in a much better position, you know, by being a bigger, much bigger organization, they could win contracts and so on. So you have to kind of go, and of course, Katie, what's really difficult is in a partnership where you're looking at practices merging, you might have some older partners that go, well, I'm only here for 1 or 2 years. I don't want to take a hit. And then you've got some younger partners going, well, we need to do this for, you know, for the practice to continue. So it does get very difficult. But yeah, I mean, and we can certainly help with, you know, doing that modeling, you know, and preparing projections, because you might have, I dealt with a merger recently, Katie, and they were 3 partners in one practice. So although they were on paper probably earning less than one of the other practices, actually they had a partner that was due to retire, which meant if they didn't need to replace all their sessions or so on, that actually they would then be more in line. So you have got to kind of work through those numbers.
Yeah, and we talk about mergers, but effectively some of what we're discussing, I guess you would call it maybe a takeover, you know, where one practice is taking over another practice to allow those partners to be released or or retire. Yes. Also, I'm seeing clients like that. You tend to have more mergers. A lot of my clients, some of them are more senior and they are looking for retirement. And so, yes, I'm seeing lots of takeovers taking place. And again, that has its added complexities, and there are similar to your parity level. I've had situations where the partners who are there at the moment, they've agreed like a fixed share per session for the 1 or 2 or 3 years before the takeover finally ends, or, you know, the contract term is over, and they're at quite high rates, and the partners taking over are thinking, well, do you know what, they come with experience, they know their patients, they're going to give us information and valuable information that we need, and therefore it's in our interest to give them a higher sessional rate for a small period of time. So there's always going to be some give and take.
Yes, absolutely, Katie.
So let's have a look at some of the other bits that we always want to consider when we're thinking about mergers and what it would mean going forward.
Yeah, I think one of the other things that I talk about is when you're looking to merge. So yes, we can do all the financial stuff, but it's also looking at what is going to be the working capital requirements. So when we talk about working capital, we're really talking about the money that each partner leaves in. So you each, at the moment when you do your accounts, you have a current account balance, and each practice will decide what they think is the right amount to leave in for cash flow of the business. Now, you know, if you're a small practice, you might not leave that much in because actually cash flow has been okay. But of course, once you merge and you're a bigger organization and you've got bigger costs, you might need to leave more money in. So having a discussion again up front to kind of go, right, well, what do we think the working capital, i.e. cash flow, we are going to need to leave for this merged business? Because partners might not have that in their current accounts in their individual practices. So then they've got to work towards building that up. So again, that's just sort of considerations.
And these can be quite high numbers. I mean, we can have working capital in our larger practices, you know, 150,000, 200,000, depending on, you know, your monthly or quarterly payment commitments. So these aren't necessarily small numbers. And if there are only 6 or 7 partners and we're saying you need to have £200,000 of working capital, it's a lot per partner. But yes, you know, you would hope that you can build it up slowly and organically, but there might not be that much time. So it's just something to consider. As Jenny said, everything we try and do is short term. You don't want to be spending years and years and years building up a working capital. But, you know, within that first 2 to 3 years of being a merged business, you need to have enough working capital.
Yes. And I think the other things that Smerge I've been dealing with recently is sometimes practices will treat expenses as a partnership or personal cost. So, you know, like MDU or mobile telephones, you know, again, in one practice, that might be a partnership cost that the partnership pays. In another, it might be a personal cost. So just establishing, you know, what are we agreeing to be partnership and personal costs? So I think that's more because you will obviously look to do a partnership agreement for your merged practice. So that is stuff that would come out of that. Katie, I think another consideration is the actual NHS contract. So obviously each practice has their own NHS contract, and you can decide to. So I've got some practices where they've merged and those contracts are still individual contracts. So you've still got practice A, practice B. We've got those individual contracts, but they're still run as a merged practice. Or you say to NHS England, you say, well, actually, we want one merged contract. So, Katie, when we dealt with that really large super partnership, they were originally a number of practices and they kept all the contracts individual for a year and then they merged onto one contract. I suppose the only thing to think about, and we sort of touched on this, is, you know, hopefully mergers will be successful and they'll be great, but sometimes mergers don't work. And I think, Katie, both you and I have got experience of practices where they've demerged. If you've got individual contracts, then it's easy enough to, or a lot easier to demerge your practices because you've got your individual contracts. If you merge as one contract, you're not going to be able to demerge. NHS England are not going to go, yeah, we agreed to split this list. They're never going to do that. So that is a consideration to think about.
Yeah. And I had a question once about, it was a valid question. It was practices merging. And we were talking about the pros and cons of merging the actual contract. We agreed in the end that it would be better to keep them separate. And one of the practices said, well, we have a really high weighting in our practice. So we get much more money for our patients because the demographic of patients was, you know, higher weighted. They said, oh, should we put all of the patients from practice A onto our list so that everybody gets highly weighted? And I said, well, no, it doesn't work like that because it isn't just the practice that they're registered at. It's actually to do with the individual themselves, where they live. who they are. And so they were trying to obviously be really clever and get, you know, a higher weighted list, but it doesn't always work like that in practice. So in this scenario, each practice kept their own lists, and realistically, they weren't location-wise that close together. So it would never really be that a patient from practice A would have ever registered at practice B. It just wasn't the case. They just had, you know, shared services, etc. And that's why the merger occurred. Yes. But as Jenny said, actually, I think individuals would probably be more surprised at the number of demergers we do actually have. I don't know what the percentages would be, maybe 20% probably demerge. What do you think? That's too high? I don't know. It's difficult to say.
I'm kind of thinking I've had two. I think I've only got two that have actually demerged.
I've got two as well. And I haven't got that many merged together. So yeah. I think it's difficult to quantify, but it does happen more than I am always expecting it to happen as well. Yes. So it is just something to think about, but definitely keeping a separate contract.
And Katie, the only other thing really to also, this is not so much financial, is obviously staff. So if your practice is emerging, then the staff obviously need to have the same terms and conditions. You've also got to think about what salaries your staff are on. So I dealt with a merger where, for example, all the receptionists were on a slightly different hourly rate in one practice to another practice. So when we were looking at kind of doing sort of projections, we were then trying to build in, if we are basically making staff at all practices all the same terms and conditions and similar hourly rates, we needed to build that in and factor that that was actually a cost of the merger. So again, that's something that you've got to think about. And all staff, you know, if you're merging, they would all be chupied over onto sort of the new merged practice.
Yeah, and I guess the only other thing to mention before we talk about where we come in as accountants, if a merger or when a merger takes place, is just to talk about the assets of the practice, things like the fixed assets or even a property, you know, any considerations around those?
Yeah, I think obviously if there's fixed assets, so these are all your fixture and fittings, these are all your tables, your chairs. Normally, I mean, you wouldn't go around revaluing what they're all worth. You normally kind of look at the accounts and look at what their book value is, and then you would introduce that. And that would really be part of the working capital requirements. You know, if practice A has got £10,000 worth of assets, then the partners in practice A are introducing those assets to the business. So that's part of, you know, their introduction. You wouldn't necessarily go around and revalue. Obviously, the property, I suppose, is a question of then, you know, if one surgery owns their property and the other doesn't, you know, are the other partners going to have an option to buy in? So then there's all of that. That's probably a podcast in itself, Katie. Mm-hmm. And I think if we're talking about property, I suppose the other thing is, if you're merging with a practice and they're in leased premises, it's worth just finding out whether they've got service charge issues, because obviously we've got lots of practices in NHS property buildings that are in dispute with their service charges. And again, normally when you deal with merger agreements, you would have some clauses that would say, you know, you would indemnify the other practice, i.e. if you've made provisions of 100,000 for service charges and you pay 120 when you merge, obviously that 20 extra wouldn't be taken as this was pre merger. So that's also another thing. But again, as accountants, we would probably ask all those questions just to consider.
Yeah, when we're preparing, or your accountant is preparing your effectively final set of accounts before you merge, if it is more of a formal merger, then you're going to ask lots and lots of questions about money's due and money's owed, etc. You want to get as, well, we always try anyway, but especially when there's going to be a significant change, we always try and be as specific as possible. Service charge provisions are a little bit trickier because we don't necessarily know what you're going to negotiate with NHS Propco to pay. However, we try and put in the maximum figure anyway, so there isn't anybody having to contact ex-partners and ask them to put monies in, because nobody ever wants to be in that position. So I guess we can move on to talking about the accountancy side of when there's a merger and what it means for us when we're dealing with practices who have merged.
Yeah, so I often get asked, oh, is there a good time to merge? And of course, yeah, an ideal time will always be like the 1st of April, but that never really happens in reality. So the mergers I'm dealing with, they're sort of going through sort of mid-year. So what I say to practices is, one, I think there's a decision to be made, you know, if you're going to do one set of accounts. So I've dealt with mergers before, and Katie, you've probably come across this, where they've kept the NHS contract separate and actually they still do individual accounts for each sort of, in a sense, each site. But then obviously the partners, you know, are all the same partners on both sets of accounts. But if you're merging and you're just one merged practice, I would expect one set of merged accounts to be produced. But of course, if let's say you merge, you know, partway through your accounting year, then you'll need to do a set of accounts, a period set of accounts for your individual practices. So let's say you merge on the 1st of July 24, you're a March year end, then those individual practices are going to have to prepare accounts for 3 months to June. And just like you mentioned, Katie, they're going to need to make sure that includes literally everything that relates to that individual practice. You know, income comes in so late. So, you know, I always say to practices, you know, around your merger date, you need to be looking at income. Is this the new merged practice or does it relate to the old practice? Just so that you can kind of work out whose income is who and that it falls into the right set of accounts. So I think that's really important to look at.
Yeah, I mean, all of the experiences I've had actually at present, other than takeovers, as I mentioned, which are sort of, they are mergers, but they're more severe because otherwise a practice would close effectively. I've always had it where there's been two separate practice codes, E codes, F codes. And so there's always been two separate sets of accounts. And in those two situations, as I mentioned, there has been effectively a demerger situation, which from an accounting point of view, and I guess for the practices standing alone, it means that in each individual sets of accounts, we knew whose money was whose. If in those situations there was only a merge set, trying to unpick it would be far more difficult. And also, again, this is a minor point, but if you're in the NHS pension scheme and you have separate codes, separate practice codes, you will need to do a superannuation certificate for each practice. And of course, if you have only one set of merged accounts, that can make it a little bit trickier. There's workarounds, but it can be trickier.
Yeah, I had that where they merged and we did one set of accounts, but they still had their individual contracts. So it just got messy with trying to sort out pensionable pay and was it one practice or was it the other practice? So yeah, it can get a little bit messy. I think the other thing just to mention, Katie, is change of basis. So we've done obviously a podcast about change of basis. This is only relevant if you do or you did your accounts to a non-March year end. So let's say you're a practice that did your accounts to June 23. You're obviously all having to move to a March year end. So yes, you'll do a March set of accounts. But part of that transition is that you'll be able to spread some of your profits over 5 years, these sort of transition rules. So I'm dealing with a merger where actually they were all June year end. So there were three practices. They were all June year ends, all merging. But what I explained to them was, is I said, well, actually only one partnership tax reference can continue. So those other partnerships are effectively ceasing. So from a HMRC point of view, you wouldn't be able to use the transition rules and be able to spread these profits, which meant they were then going to all have, you know, those partners that the partnerships have ceased, they were going to have big tax bills. So that's also a consideration to think about, because if you've got, say, a practice with a March year end and historically a non-March year end, you need to think about, well, what partnership will continue? It would obviously be better that the non-March year end continues so that the partners can benefit from the transition rules. So that sounds really complicated, Katie. So I think anybody listening, if you're thinking of merging, you know, obviously speak to your accountant. There's a lot of things to think about when we're dealing with the finances and the accounts.
And hopefully, if you're only sort of just thinking about it now, everybody has now effectively moved to a March year end. So it depends on how long these things take. They don't usually happen quickly. Usually the mergers will take a year or two. We know how slowly things move in the NHS. So it may be that many of those partners anyway will be part of the way through their transition and they are able to, you know, we'd look at who has what left and who would be most practical to cover it. And it might be that, let's say, for example, you are forced into having one partnership, HMRC reference. There would be, say, two partners who have to pay all of their tax liabilities in one go. It might be that they take a little bit more working capital or some money out to cover their tax liabilities. And the other partners who are having the benefit of splitting their tax over a few years, they have a little bit more in, just to sub the partners who have been forced into a position that they, you know, wouldn't normally have chosen to. I guess it's quite an unusual situation to be in at the moment, this transition period.
Yeah, and I agreed, Katie, and that's exactly what one of my practices did. And again, it's just working through the numbers, looking at it and making a practical decision. That shouldn't be a make or break of the merger, definitely.
And I just think the takeaway is, although we've mentioned it, you know, demergers can happen. So just make sure, and this isn't necessarily a financial point, but that you do have a partnership agreement and that you do all come to the table being open and honest from day one with your finances, as Jenny said in the beginning, with your accounts, with your expectations and with what you expect from each other. Because if you have two partners who work in a different way, merging with partners who have a different work ethic or just a different way of running the practice, there might be clashes and it just might not work. And that is okay, but much better that you don't enter into expensive, you know, asking accountants to do projections, asking lawyers to draw up legal agreements, and then going through the process of merging for it to only not work. And then sadly having to unpick it all and demerge. And we would rather you would try to avoid that where possible.
Yeah. And I think it's so key to look at finances really early on as well, and maybe just have like a medical accountant review the accounts. I'm thinking of a merger I dealt with recently, and they'd pretty much signed up to this merger without really properly looking at all the accounts. So yeah, I think, you know, don't assume that just because your similar practices, similar list size profits are going to be similar. You know, it's really important to get advice and to have a review. And as we've said, Katie, you know, we do this quite a lot for a lot of mergers that we're dealing with.
Great, Jenny. Well, I think we've covered obviously just the basics, but if there is anybody listening who has been considering a merger, or even if you just have any questions about mergers, do drop us a line. All the details of our contacts are in the show note descriptions. And if you have enjoyed this podcast, please do like and subscribe. And we look forward to seeing you next time. Bye.
Bye, Katie.
You have been listening to RBP's Accountancy on Prescription podcast. For any updates, please visit www.rbp.co.uk or follow us on Twitter at RBPCA. The contents of this podcast is for general guidance and informational purposes only and does not constitute any form of advice. The information provided by RBP is of a general nature. Appropriate and tailored advice or independent research should be obtained before making any decisions. RBP does not accept any liability for any loss or damage which is incurred from you acting or not acting as a result of listening to Accountancy on Prescription.